The following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, given on June 20th, 1999, in Dublin, Ireland.
I'm reading Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 3. Ashradadhana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa apapyamam nivartante mityusam saravartmani. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. Prabhupada starts the purport. The faithless cannot accomplish the process of devotional service. That is the purport of this verse. Faith is created by association with devotees. But he goes on to say that some people, even though they hear the Shastras presented rightly, telling all the qualities of Krishna, they still remain faithless. Prabhupada talks about three kinds of faithful devotees. And the third class, lowest class, they don't have much faith, but a little bit of faith that somehow brought them to the association of devotees. And they don't have very good Shastric knowledge, so they could easily be talked out of their faith. And then the second class, they have firm faith, but maybe not so well conversant in the scriptures. So their position is much better. And a first class has firm faith and it's also firm conviction and knowledge in the scriptures. And Prabhupada says twice in the purport, faith is very important in the discharge of devotional service. On one hand, to talk about faith among group like this, it might seem that we already have attained faith. We are the faithful. But for myself, I feel that this is a very much still a live issue. Every time I go to read the Srimad Bhagavatam verse or purport, I'm likely to hear within my head some kind of lack of faith. Although you believe this, and I have to overcome that. Krishna told Arjuna, the doubts that arise in your mind due to ignorance, you should use the weapon of yoga, rise and fight. But I don't think that's done just once, and then it's done forever. So especially those of us who in this lifetime were skeptically formed by our culture and by our own inclination. It's very prominent to be challenged in the faith. So it's an important thing to maintain and understand. Prabhupada used to often define faith in two different ways. One is what he called initial faith, as in Rupa Goswami's verse, Adava Shradak Tataksara Sangha, where he mentions the steps in devotional service, and the very first one is faith. So Prabhupada would consider even a person who just wandered into the temple with some kind of good feeling that maybe these people have something interesting to show, or even more casual than that, stop on the street, listen to the chanting, a little curiosity, faith. And then he would also describe faith based on a verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as real faith is a nishta, or the fixed conviction that cannot be changed by any doubts. Firm faith. Faith that if I could attain Krishna consciousness, all my desires will be fulfilled. I'll be completely satisfied. You don't have to have already attained it, but you have to have that faith. This is the thing. This is the process. If I could attain it, I would be happy. I looked up in the dictionary, two different dictionaries about faith, and one says, one of the meanings is unquestioning belief in God, and unquestioning belief that does not require proof or evidence. Faith is trust in God and His actions and promises, a conviction of the truth of certain doctrines of religion. Although we can give evidences about our conclusions in Krishna consciousness, about the nature of the soul, the nature of God, Krishna, transmigration, all the different teachings, it's true that we don't have a certain kind of proof or evidence of it, certainly not an empirical evidence. So somehow or other we form this willingness to accept things on authority of scripture or guru without it having been proven to us. We accept the principle of faith as a valid way to live. Now, when we think of Srila Prabhupada and his mission, his preaching, he was very empowered in this way. In one purport, Prabhupada describes the mission of Lord Buddha, and he says he created faith among the faithless. He was particularly preaching at a time to people who were faithless. So even them, he was able to get them to behave rightly and stop material desires. So I thought that phrase is also apt for Srila Prabhupada. He created faith in the faithless. And I know he created faith in me in that way. In New York City, he came in 1966. Well, when Prabhupada went out into the park and chanted, we got our first big newspaper coverage. It was something in the New York Times, but also on the front page of a local Lower East Side paper. And they noted this power of Prabhupada to create faith in a very difficult place. So this article, the headline on the front was Save Earth Now, and we brought it to Prabhupada, and planting the seed. I tell about how Prabhupada had us read the newspaper before him. It was a fanciful story of a group of theologians who had killed an old man in a church, and of the subsequent press report that God was now dead. But the story went on. Some people didn't believe it. They had dug up the body and found it to be not the body of God, but that of his PR man, organized religion. At once the good tidings spread across the wide world. God lives. But where was God? And it goes on to give some different ways people tried to find out who God was. God, said some people, lives in a sugar cube. Others whispered that the sacred secret was in a cigarette. But while all this was going on, an old man, 1 year past his allotted 70, wandered into New York's East Village and set about to prove to the world that he knew where God could be found. In only 3 months, the man, Swami A.C. Bhaktivedanta, succeeded in convincing the world's toughest audience, bohemians, acid heads, potheads, and hippies, that he knew the way to God. Turn off, sing out, and fall in. This new brand of holy man, with all due deference to Dr. Leary, has come forth with a brand of consciousness expansion that's sweeter than acid, cheaper than pot, and none bustable by fuzz. How is all this possible? Through Krishna, the Swami says. So, Prabhupada had a way of presenting the philosophy that made it very attractive, and he was a living representative of a devotee. So one wanted to be like him. If you're thinking of following somebody, that occurs to you. I remember Rabindra Sarup tells a story how when he was a college student, he would meet with his different professors, and the idea that he might become a professor like them of philosophy. But he would ask himself, do I want to be like them? Because that would be natural. And he always got a very strong negative feeling that I don't want to be like them. I don't want to wind up like them. So it was the opposite with Prabhupada. He used to say, Krishna consciousness is such a nice thing. And we would look at him, and he seemed so transcendental to the time and place, and so happy within. So whatever that was, we wanted that. We're attracted. I don't think you can exactly analyze faith. It kind of, this is a topic like love, it may just disappear if you try to analyze it too much. But certainly it has to happen. And you start practicing and start accepting the Shastra conclusions, not only because of their logical strength or their appeal, but taking the position of accepting this higher truth. And I think, thinking in terms of faith, in my first questions to Prabhupada, they were on this topic in one sense. The first question in his room I asked him was, is there a stage of spiritual advancement you can make from which you won't fall back? Because I thought that I had experienced sometimes some spiritual advancement, but I always fell back from it, back into bad habits. So he said yes. And he didn't go into any detail, but that was like faith. I believe him. I'll explain a little longer, a little later, how faith works in all areas of life. But it's one thing to have faith, ask a man for directions in a car, and believe that he's telling you the right thing, and to ask somebody about spiritual advancement, about the care of your soul. He's a holy man, and from a great tradition, and so he said that, and I accepted it. I'll just thought of something about ordinary faith, a little personal revelation. In my attempt to improve my health, I've noticed that I don't sleep well at night. I have insomnia, a mild case. So I got one book about it, and I was reading it. And the man in there said something that I'd heard many people say before. Madhu was often saying it, that you shouldn't take naps in the daytime. So somehow I read this, and the way he presented it, I just said, okay, that's it. And since that was about a week ago, I don't take any more naps. And it's just at the right time, the right person, something just clicks, and we just want to do what they said. So if you're fortunate to meet a pure devotee and you decide, okay, yeah, I'll do that. I'll give up illicit sex. That makes sense. Meat eating, intoxication. I don't know why it happens to some people. I was reading a letter from a devotee the other day, and they were describing their coming to Krishna consciousness, and he said, yeah, and I heard this, and it just clicked with me, and I decided this is, yes, this, something inside me said yes, and it clicked, and I decided to join the devotees. That's the seed of faith occurring. And then I remember a little later, Prabhupada was, and I was studying Bhagavad Gita under Prabhupada, and then one day he told us about, in the class, about how Krishna married 16,108 wives, and that really upset me, because sometimes we believe a certain percentage of things in the scriptures. But then if you have to believe in something else, then it kind of threatens what you were willing to believe. So I like the teachings of transmigration, and even that Krishna is God, and what we were learning in Bhagavad Gita. But this other thing, I didn't like it at all. So it just sounded so fantastic, and also so out of character for a supreme person. So I raised my hand, and I said something like that. I said, I'm trying to accept the Bhagavad Gita in good faith, but when I hear this, it's very difficult to accept. And Prabhupada said, it's difficult for you. He said, it's difficult for the greatest scholars. So these are the kind of things that, as I say, even today, when you go to read, these may pop up. And we may have different interesting ways we deal with this in terms of our having a live faith. I have a transcript of Prabhupada in the morning walk talking about faith. And I think the purpose of looking at this is so you're not intimidated by thinking that faith is some inferior process of living or having knowledge, say, as opposed to reason. This is sometimes done in a simplistic way, people saying that, that's a matter of faith, like it's for sentimental people. But we understand things by reason. So in this talk, Prabhupada makes it clear that faith operates everywhere. Bharadraj, devotee. So knowledge is not necessary for faith, but faith is necessary for knowledge. Prabhupada, yes. Therefore, a devotee, without any knowledge, he becomes a devotee. Faith, only faith. The devotee advances. Later on, they become automatically full of knowledge because they have strong faith. Earlier on this talk, on the tape, I heard a devotee ask Prabhupada, how does one particular person come to manifest faith and others don't? And Prabhupada said it's purity. Purity. And another devotee volunteered. He said, oh, you mean from past lives, pious activities? And Prabhupada just said, if you have purity, then you get more faith and knowledge. But in the beginning, you must have faith. Tesham ivanukam partam aham agyanajam tamad. Because he is faithful, therefore I help him to get knowledge. Again, you come to that. The devotee says, blind faith is the belief that Prabhupada, blind faith, that I have already explained, why do you forget? He shows me, Prabhupada, come this way. He's saying, like, when they're walking on their walk, the devotee says, come this way, Prabhupada. We'll walk over here, there's no puddles. So Prabhupada says, I have no faith, why shall I go? If I have no faith, then I have to stop here and my movement is finished. So you have to keep faith blindly. And the man is giving direction. If he's perfect, your faith will make you advanced. But if you go to a rascal cheater, if you have blind faith, then you are lost. The child has no knowledge, but he has faith in his parents, and he believes what his parents say. Then he's making progress. Just like you go to a barber shop and you put your neck like this, and he is with the razor. So unless you have faith, no, he's a good man, he will not cut my throat. How can you do so? Faith is the beginning. If you say, no, I have no faith in you, then you cannot be cleansed. Bharadraj, that example became very clear when we went to India, because the barbers are so, they look like they could cut your throat. Prabhupada, he can do that, but you must have faith, otherwise no shaving. Suppose you are going to some unknown place. Now we are purchasing, paying $2,000 for a ticket. But where is the guarantee that you will go there? You are paying first money. There's no guarantee that you will go there. Then how do you get the ticket? How do you get on the plane without faith? Without faith, you cannot move an inch. It must be there. We say, no, this ticket is issued by the Pan American. They are a good company. So many people are going. I will go also. That's all. Faith. You never went there. Neither you know whether it will be possible to go there. You have to purchase ticket. If you say, first of all, let me go there, then I shall pay. They will say, get out. First of all, pay. Then you come on. Then a devotee says, Chitsukananda says, when we were first coming to this movement, Srila Prabhupada, we opened Bhagavad Gita, myself, I read. I said, I don't understand this. So I began to clean the floor, wash the dishes, cut the vegetables. Prabhupada, yes, very good. Seven mukhi jivado, by service only. You can understand God simply by service. There is no other way, and the faith begins from the tongue. So, we needn't be intimidated by somebody saying that faith is just something that the religionists have. It's just a matter of what you have faith. Everybody has faith in something. I'm mostly thinking in terms of faith in the Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, what they teach. And so much of it is beyond any material experience that we have. And we don't have spiritual experience of it either. But we accept it. This faith or lack of faith could also be, we can consider it in many different ways. It can be broadened. For example, you might have, as far as you are willing to say, that you do have faith in the scriptures, but you consider them to be extremely ideal statements, and that you cannot see how you could make any attainment of those states, or that anybody else has. That would be lack of faith in yourself, say. And then, or lack of faith that people can take to Krishna consciousness. You may have lack of faith in the institution, ISKCON. Or we may have some faith, personal faith, but that doesn't mean we have all faith. Our faith goes to a certain degree, I suppose, when it gets tested, in difficult times, and you still have to believe in Krishna. And Krishna's not, if you think, yes, Krishna is guiding my way, his providence, and then you don't like the way things are happening, and you still have to have faith in Krishna. Then you see how much faith you actually have. In the Christian gospel, with Jesus, faith is a very important thing. He's always asking people to have faith in him, and he says if they have faith in him, if they have faith in God, then they can do anything. You can tell a mountain to move and it will move. And when somebody has faith, then a miracle can occur to them. But some people use their faith in a way like that they want to get a certain result, like faith healing, you want to get health, or something that you want, and you feel that your faith in God will make this thing come about. But that could be a very fruitive kind of thing, as if God has to prove himself, or you prove yourself by certain measurable things in this world. We see sports athletes, they pray, and then they win, and they give credit to God. I had faith. But we don't want faith. We don't want to use faith like that, but just have faith to that Krishna exists, and that Krishna loves me, and that Krishna accepts my service. All these dimensions are the reality that we want to live in, regardless of whether we win or lose some money or some game or something. We maintain the faith that Krishna wanted this to happen. I'll pause here and see if we can churn up some topics of discussion. Anyone say something? Huh?
Krishna challenging Arjuna to arm the yoga to get rid of the doubt. And he said that may not just be a one off thing, but that probably something may happen every single day. And in relation to faith, it's something that it's almost seen as a weakness if you're sort of challenging your faith, if you like, you know, sort of wanting to question things, etc. And particularly for someone on a religious path, it's almost seen, if they have blind faith, that's seen as a strength, you know, that they completely accept. And it may become like a barrier to actually, like, for instance, when Prabhupada was reading from the Krishna book about Krishna having 16,108 wives, I was thinking, you put up your hand and you express the doubt, and like that, and I was thinking to myself, I probably wouldn't have done that, but it would have been seen as a weakness of the eye, but it doesn't believe, it doesn't accept like that. So how do we see that, you know, even though on one level it is a weakness to have a lack of faith, but actually it's also a good thing to, you know, not to hide what we're about.
Well, yeah, it's not a good thing. That, like I admitted, it wasn't so happy to have to say that almost every time I read, I'm likely to something to go up in my brain. Well, is this really true? But you have to be honest that you can't hide it, because another thing could be to live with an official kind of faith that you don't even very complacently go to your church or your temple. You don't really think about these things, and you don't have any lack of faith, but you don't have any particular fervor either. You're just going through the motions. But if you have any conscience or self-awareness, then you see how am I receiving this knowledge? Is it just putting me to sleep? Is it inspiring me? Or do I, you know, I don't really, I believe it, but I don't, if you really pressed me and asked me, do you really, really, really believe that? You say, well, I don't know. Well, why are you a devotee? I've been a devotee for so long already. Well, why did you join? Yeah, well, when I joined, I had faith. So, if we don't have faith, it may be a sign of weakness to have these doubts instead of being fixed. I remember Prabhupada went to a so-called ecumenical meeting, I think it was in Canada, with priests. And they were talking, and one of the priests asked him, don't you ever have any doubts? And Prabhupada said, doubts? No, of course not. How can I be a teaching if I have any doubts? But they were like disturbed. They wanted him to say he had doubts because they had doubts. So you're right. A fixed spiritual person will not have doubts. And but I'm to answer your question, that doesn't mean you have to embarrass yourself, tell everybody, you know, like I did, raise my hand and say, you know, although I've been a devotee, I find it very difficult. Yeah, everyone will look at you. Well, he doesn't even believe in Krishna. But you have to come out with it some way to yourself or to your confidant. Say, I'm really having trouble understanding philosophy and so on and so forth. And people have different things bother different people. Like some people left this movement when Prabhupada started saying that a man didn't go to the moon. Or if they didn't leave it, they still can't accept some of these things that the stars are reflectors and not suns on their own. And other people, like me, I don't have such a scientific integrity or need to line all those things up right. But there are other things that might bother me. So you could go with your doubts, your particular doubts, to someone and or deal with it on your own. Doubts are not good. Like I told you, that essay Hayagriva wrote an essay about to rout doubt. And Prabhupada liked the essay, then he scratched the title out and he gave it a new title, Doubt Thy Name Is Bondage. So it's a kind of a bondage to doubting. So the combination of knowledge and faith is very good. Often doubt would be, you know, if you pinpoint a doubt, maybe it comes from some scientific theory that's against Krishna consciousness or something or other. And then you can get a good specific reply by our acharyas of the past or our devotees in the present. To the degree that I mean, like everybody, we all are affected by the science and the tremendous influence of technology, which makes science seem to have truth and religion not. But I've been really encouraged hearing the different talks by Sadaput Prabhu, that where he slams back at them with their own, he takes the axe with the handle from their tree, and it really makes me think. No need to be intimidated by them. They're cheating. They don't know what they're saying. And this is like this, and this is like this. So there are different places that you can get strength for the specific doubts that you may have. And then, if it's they keep coming, you can at least recognize them for what they are. All right? You have
to. Sometimes, when completely outsider would come to you, especially if he's in his Christian background, and he would ask you, do you believe in God? Do you believe in God? And it's one side, you don't want to discourage him and say, well, actually, I'm not really believing, but I have some doubt. But in the same time, another answer I would give, oh, believing is not really enough. Or that's not really a point here, belief or faith, anything is truly a science.
Yeah.
So it's not just believing. So, but at the same time, it's such an essential thing.
Yeah.
I always get confused when they ask this.
That's a kind of an illusion to think that it's of a tremendous importance to the reality of a thing, whether I believe it or not. Like if I put it down, if I don't accept it, it's negated. And I saw Prabhupada do that so many times and so well with people that they would, with a sense of self-importance. A skeptic in the audience would say that, you know, I don't believe this for such and such reason. And Prabhupada would then say, in so many words, well, the fact that you don't believe it, that doesn't have anything to do with whether it's a fact or not. You may believe or not believe. That's a different thing. You know, your particular angle on it, that's a different thing. We're not talking about whether you know, John Smith, believe or not. We're talking about the science of Bhagavad Gita, the science of the soul, and just kind of take the emphasis off that all importance of whether the person believes or not. At least the matter isn't settled universally because you cannot accept something. And then, aside from how to handle that angle, there's nothing wrong with our saying that we are, you know, pilgrims on the path, and we accept as much as we can. We have faith. When we want more faith. So Prabhupada said it comes from service, increase your faith, and don't do things that would decrease your faith. But you say, you know, you don't know how to answer a person. They said, do you believe in God? Do you believe all this? Yeah, you say, yes, I believe. If he says, do you ever have any doubts? If you do, then you can say yes. You don't have to admit. There's nothing wrong with admitting different things. But we're not going to give up. I remember one time we were going to North Ireland. We were stopped when they used to have the border guard. And he was engaging us for quite a while, talking about the island. You come from the island. What do you do out there? And he said, we pray. And he said, don't you ever get bored? And I was thinking of saying yes. But I didn't want to mess around. He had his hand on his trigger. And I think Mata was doing pretty good as it was. But we get bored, we get doubts, we get angry, we get lusty. But we're still devotees and we're not trying to... trying to increase all those things. That's again the Prabhupada story with me. I've told it many times that I asked him how to answer that question. If people say, do you believe this? Are you going to go back to Godhead? I said, I honestly don't think I am. I can't say that I am. So how can I answer that? So if any shifted it on, I don't have to, when you're preaching, you don't have to just talk about your stage of realization. They present the science. He said, no, it's you just tell him that this is a science. If he follows it, he will go back to Godhead. It doesn't matter whether I am perfect or I'm going back to Godhead. And then I said, okay, I understand that. But then he changed it. He said, it's not that you're just telling people about it and you're not going there. That it's not an export business. That you get the package and you send it off. But you have to go too. So you can say, I'm trying.
I think more both to explain to others
about faith, or often then some practical advice brought up for ourselves. And that quote the prophet saying somewhere there that he kind of, it's more at the end, like he'd explained about service, and he said, yes, beginning at the tongue. So I think you'd speak with
him. Yeah, see what he says first. There's no other way but service, and faith begins from the tongue. You see? Therefore, it is advised that you chant and take prasad. Then faith will come. Sevan mukhi jiva do. Faith begins with the tongue. Why? People will be surprised. Faith must begin from the mind, from the eyes. Why is it said tongue? They do not know. That is also faith, simply engaging the tongue in the service of the Lord. I shall understand. This is blind faith, but actually it is happening. Chant Hare Krishna and take prasadam. That's all. So, especially when you meet a person who's just hearing about Krishna consciousness, if they can't accept other things, these things they can accept, here, take some prasadam, and then they eat the prasadam, and then they get sort of a little more receptive towards further faith, or they hear the chanting, or they chant themselves with their tongue. So when you can engage people in chanting, either because it's a song or it's that they want to sing with you, or it's you tell them it's meditation and make them peaceful, they try to chant, or if they take prasadam, these are ways to develop the faith. And faith isn't like you develop your muscles. It comes from God. He gives you faith, and when He sees that you're sincere, you get more faith and spiritual knowledge. That's also a very early exchange I had with Prabhupada about the Bhagavad Gita. I wrote him that I realized the Bhagavad Gita, you had to have special knowledge, not like in college. If you had intelligence and studied, you could understand it. But it took a special grace, a mystical understanding. And I saw that until I got that, I wouldn't understand. And I wrote that to Prabhupada, and he said, you're a sincere devotee, so Krishna will give you intelligence to understand the Bhagavad Gita. And I understood that was the method. It comes from Krishna if you are sincere or if you do service. I say it's super mundane, coming from God. But in another sense, it's even psychological, that when you start to acting in Krishna consciousness and good results from your experience, that gives you faith. Trust, loyalty. Anyone else?
The term test of faith seems to more than self faith. We have to find the word test of faith is even more difficult to say, well, what is the test of faith? Is it just like you're saying self awareness? Like, for example, would be like somebody very faithful, somebody chanted, will try their best to really heal and heal and heal. That's very faithful. Somebody just chants, but then doesn't even try, just kind of hop and lose intention. They're not so faithful that they have to do it. But that's a self-awareness. But is it more something that's actually external, that like something comes out that's testing our faith?
Testing.
And that does the faith, like, okay, your faith is actually going to increase now, or it's going to be decreased. Like, sometimes something like that doesn't actually change our barometer of faith. Or is it just self-awareness where you actually just see, well, I'm here. Two very distinct definitions of testing of faith.
I'm not quite sure I've got a handle on what you said. But the test of faith that we typically think of is a real difficult time in which difficult in terms of, say, physical pain or danger or duress, grief, but also since you are a Krishna devotee, you're thinking, why are you doing this to me? Someone who was going through a lot of difficulty was telling me about it in a letter, and they said that finally in the end they'd been sort of faithful, then they just broke down and became angry at Krishna and was saying, why have you done this to me? I tried so hard to keep up with it, and now it's still so bad. Why have you done this? And he felt very bad that he had he said, I failed the test. I wrote back and I reassured him. I said, you didn't fail the test. That was just a weak moment, because you went on trying anyway, and you passed the test. But that's the scenario, as I think of it, when you say a test of faith. Or some, I say miseries, or some real temptation, you know, from a real maya, gives you something right on a silver platter, but you have to give up your Krishna consciousness. That would be a test of faith too. Do I really want to still be a devotee? But what you're saying about self-awareness, when you you are a faithful person, that you see where you are at. I think it's self-awareness, but also it's the event that Krishna is presenting to you. I'll just have to leave that. I didn't quite catch it. Another one. What was that? You said a crop? I think there's definitely a connection. There's that principle called utsaha, enthusiasm, which is very, very important, and faith is very, very important. So if anything in Krishna consciousness, if you don't have utsaha, say, I may have some knowledge of the scriptures, but I'm not so excited by it. Or I have some ability to do a certain service, but I'm not really into it. Without the utsaha, you're a dull devotee, your flame of devotional service is too low. So with faith, it should be like, not just, do you believe in God? Yes. Do you believe Krishna is God? Yes. You're not interested to hear about Krishna. The pure devotees, they want to hear, and they want to serve. They're enthusiastic. So that there's a definite more enthusiasm your faith has, the better it is. It's sort of a sign of lack of faith that you just hold it as a nominal belief. Like somebody has a political opinion, he has a leftist political opinion or a rightist political opinion, or he has an opinion about TV shows and this. But what does it matter? Some people they don't care much about it one way or another. So we should have burning convictions. But you were saying, if we serve and we don't get good results, then we'll be not so enthusiastic, and our faith may go down. That's true. So we should try not to have that happen. We should associate with devotees who have utsaha, and put ourselves into situations that will keep us alive in Krishna consciousness. Because the faith, it can't be something that I once had. When I joined, I had this faith, and then I formed it at a time of initiation, I consummated it, and that's it. And I haven't touched it or developed it at its core in 20 years. It's just that I'm Hare Krishna, I believe in Krishna, I don't really think about it much. I don't really feel much about it. I just go about my business. But every day you have to have faith. That's why, although I don't welcome it when I read, and I have a doubt, oh, could this really be true? What they say about the other planets and so on and so forth. But I answer the doubt and I keep reading every day. I have to keep alive, or else the faith can become nominal. But what do you mean by getting good results? We have to be determined, even if we don't get immediate results, and that shouldn't affect our faith. Although, as I said, it could be that I believe in the scriptures, but I don't have the faith that I can do it. That's another under nourishment, you have to try to overcome that too. That's why it's nice if we can engage in a service that enthuses us, and then we can feel, oh, I'm acting in Krishna consciousness, I feel happy in this. It's according to my nature, and I'm doing what I like to do for Krishna. And then I see some results. Prabhupada, he was such a fighter that even if he got, when he tried to preach, if he got bad results from the demons, then he got more Krishna consciousness. It didn't affect his faith. But there was always some kind of reciprocation going on by his convictions and his Krishna consciousness. There was no question of becoming. So don't plant that crop that doesn't come up. Why waste your time? Plant something that you know will come up.
So it seems like faith is a really, really, really powerful thing. So you might have faith, and I forget what was the name of that Hari Guru asked?
Faith, doubt, thy name is bondage.
Yeah, bondage, so kind of bound into a world with a lack of faith or whatever. So faith, you know, is really powerful like that. So you may have a lot of faith, but there may be something that's not directly related. You may not doubt that, you know, Krishna has 16,108 lives, or that, you know, reincarnation karma. You may not doubt any aspect of philosophy. But then there may be something like, say, envy, which isn't, in one sense, a doubt or a lack of faith, but it's something that you've maybe inherited from previous life or whatever. How is that going to affect faith? And in other words, you know, you may have faith, you may have complete faith even, but does that get rid of envy? So just that you have faith, or...
Well, in a sense, it's a different thing, although in Krishna consciousness, when we discuss it, so many things overlap. So like this, the concept of surrender is also similar to faith. I've been discussing faith by itself. But usually something like that, envy, would be more under discussion of anarthas, or personal habits that I have that are unwanted by me, that are holding me back in spiritual life. So for that to be... To consider that in terms of faith, it might be like I said, you say, well, I love this philosophy. I think it's a beautiful philosophy. I've read other religious philosophies. None of them compare to this. It's so wonderful. And I accept it all. We don't know with our senses what's going on out there. And the Vedas tell us perfectly. But I personally, as a devotee, I feel so envious towards other devotees and people in general. And I don't seem to be able to improve this at all, and it's really getting me down. In fact, I think I'll never be able to make any spiritual advancement. It really pollutes my mind. If you really go on and on like that, then it would be like I was saying, a lack of faith in the process. You said, well, Prabhu, if you keep taking the Krishna consciousness, you're serving and trying your best, your envy will diminish. No, it won't. It's getting worse. So that would be a kind of lack of faith in the process. I said, Prabhupada quoted Krishnadas Kaviraj, who said, faith is nishta, or firm conviction, so that all my desires will be fulfilled by Krishna consciousness. But that person, say, who's so hung up on his own envy, might say, I don't have faith that if I follow this, I will achieve the goal. I think I'm just cursed by this. So he should understand that Krishna's mercy is greater than his envy. And if you keep practicing Krishna consciousness, you won't be envious someday.
And towards the end of your talk there, you were mentioning how that's to have a non-fruitive attitude in faith, having the fruitive attitude in faith tends to sort of spoil it a little bit. And although, like in the question from Ananda Meyer, you mentioned that, you know, we shouldn't do something which is, you know, we shouldn't plant the crop which we know is going to fail, but there seems to be a motivation. Like, that's something I really go down on, and that is that you know, and I have a sort of a fruit of faith, you know, and sometimes I say, well, why isn't loads of people joining or something like that, or, you know, I'm doing something which And how do you get to that very end of the situation?
Of not being attached to the result?
Yeah. In your faith. Because, I mean, it's like it's an existential thing when something doesn't actually happen, you know, and maybe some negative things come up from the past which have taught you and gobbled over.
Yeah, you get disappointed. I don't know exactly how to get there, but we're philosophical, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur always used to say that we will have the festival Friday night if Krishna desires, or we will have a Harinam party if Krishna desires. So the Krishna conscious philosophical view is that things happen by Krishna's desire, Krishna's grace, and so my faith wouldn't be affected if I really tried to do something and it didn't work nicely. I would just try to be practical and plant the right crop, but not let the personal disappointment overwhelm me. I know that good things don't come easy, and keep trying at it. So you'd have to be not just living on your emotions of what you thought should happen, but you know, being willing to see that I have my plan, but Krishna has his plan. So I'll have to keep trying and figure out if I can do something that's actually Krishna's plan. You should always feel that we have some relationship with Krishna and what's going on. And what are you doing, Krishna? I wanted to do this, and I tried so hard and didn't come out. I don't know what you want me to do next, but I'll try this. See that Krishna is maybe playing with us or trying to teach us something. I haven't quite learned what you're trying to teach me, Krishna, but there must be some good lesson in this for me. We have to learn those lessons. Sometimes we're so stubborn we don't. I remember, Mando, you had that accident like some months ago. You were running passionately somewhere in Dublin. You hit a rail, and then you just kept going. And I said, you said, Krishna's. I think Krishna's trying to tell me something. And I said, yeah. Well, why don't you listen? But even when you get hit like that, you just keep going, like an ox or something. But we should know that it would be nice to always see that Krishna is there and he's trying to tell me something. And even if it stops me in my tracks and it's against my plans, it could be still sweet. That you just have to laugh, Krishna. I thought this was going to be so great and that you were going to love this, but you didn't even accept this. You want something else. You want my love. You want my attention in a different way. Otherwise, we're like those, like the German ladies Prabhupada talked about during the war. They prayed for their men to come back, and they didn't come back, and they all became atheists.
You mentioned when Prabhupada was talking to those priests, they asked him if he even doubts, and he said, no, how could I teach the life of death? So relating that, you know, to myself or to ourselves, it's like sometimes I feel actually quite reluctant to preach at all because, well, not at all, but in certain areas, like to tell people to surrender or things like that, or to have faith in the guru and shastra and sadhu, because I don't have that full faith, so I feel quite reluctant, but yet there's such an emphasis on preaching. I thought it was interesting that Prabhupada, his immediate response was, how could I teach if I don't have faith?
Of course, his position, like the whole movement, was depending on his convictions and his purity. And if he doubted Krishna, how's he going to lead the Hare Krishna movement? But we can't imitate Prabhupada, and I think it's important to be honest. We've had the fault of devotees pretending unconsciously or consciously to being pure devotees and better than they were, and they just fall down and cause a lot of disappointment in people who are following them as Krishna's representative. Tragedies. So it's good. it's good to be honest about your level of conviction, and then you can still preach. You can still preach accordingly. Again, without emphasizing so much your own example, just introduce people to the books and to prasadam, and talk Krishna consciousness with them. And then, if they touch on a sensitive area, if they say, "Well, should I completely surrender to the guru and do whatever he says?" And if you're feeling, "Well, how can I tell him yes?" You should definitely do that. You just have to answer it in a positive, encouraging, but honest way. And part of it might be to state a disclaimer that I don't think I'm the person who can talk with you about this. I'm not so surrendered myself, but the scriptures say like this, and this is what we should try to do. I think he'll like it. Any person would like it, that you're confiding in him. At the same time, you're definitely preaching to him. So don't rule yourself out because you have some doubts that you couldn't help somebody. That's kind of what I do in my writing, that I'm helping people by going through my doubts and yet offering some hope that you can still be a devotee and overcome doubts. And by the expression of doubts, their doubts are diminished. So you can fashion yourself according to what you have and still be true to the scriptures. What we don't want to do is, you know, teach something compromised. And because we are ourselves compromised, then we teach something compromised. If we have compromised the absolute truth in our lives, then we can admit that, but then to tell them this is the path that you should take if you want to succeed. This is the path I'm trying to take. And one thing about doubt was my original focus was the doubt in the Siddhanta and all the different statements in Siddhanta. Starting with that we are a soul, the soul lives after the body, and the soul goes to God when he's perfect, otherwise we have to come back. All these teachings and their elaborations. I find sometimes if I have any difficulty with particular things, you just have to be patient also. And know that right now, I can't understand how this is true, but the time will come when I can understand it. Prabhupada even saw his spiritual master behave once in a way he couldn't understand why he killed a snake. So he was just patient. And then years later he understood when he read something in the scriptures. And Krishna will give us more faith. But we shouldn't give up the faith that we have. And as I said, it's very important not to be intimidated by rationalists within yourself or anybody you meet who tries to debunk God because it's a faith item. I remember I was talking to a professor in the library party days, and he was arguing again that this is simply faith. He was a psychologist, and this is just faith. And that we have to know things by observation. And he was seeing me during his lunch. He was eating passionately at his desk, and he had some French fried potatoes and something he was eating and talking. And I said, "You have faith that food is not poison." And he said, "No, it's not faith." I said, "Yes, it is." And we were going back and forth. But I felt I really feel encouraged by those examples that Prabhupada gave like this. That you can show the rationalist that Prabhupada said you can't move a step, you can't go an inch without faith. So we have faith in the greatest, we have trust in something sublime. There's that wonderful definition. Faith is trust in something sublime, Prabhupada. We have a faith in something sublime, and they have faith in things that aren't sublime. Any more? Any ladies? Anyone want to give some realization about faith? Not just a question.
I don't have a realization today. I like to read the point for the thrust of his question, saying that, well, how can you preach if we're not on an absolute platform? How can we preach the absolute truth? And then you're saying that, you know, that the things you can do. I mean, the earlier point like Prabhupada saying, because I've been trying to think for myself as you were talking, how can I apply this to myself and about faith. So one thing is about preaching to others, we can get them to take the shine, get them to hear the holy name. So I think for myself I can do that as well. If I'm eating, if I'm out, I can make sure that my offering is a bit better, or that my chanting is better. And I remember you've written me a few letters going back around quite a while now, saying how we can always go back to the basics. And like the one time before I started travelling with you, there was some kind of difficulty here in Ireland, and I wrote saying how going back to trying to concentrate on the quality of my rounds again, so we can always go back to the basics. So it's like we're talking about faith, and I was thinking that's something I can do for myself. I can go back to the time, I can go back to the chanting, and to the taking time of the shaman. If there's any, in other words,
yeah.
I extend myself like in my faith, going out and say, well, do I really believe? I don't really care whether all the planets revolve around the sun or the sun revolves around. It doesn't bother me at all. But if I was to extend myself, do I really believe some aspect of that the Prabhupada's preaching? I can always come back to my basics, if you like, the faith. Well, I do have faith in the chant of the holy name, and I can tell others about it, and I feel confident to tell others about that.
Yeah. That's good. It's the bedrock of the faith, the holy names.
The transformation, because it's something that I've been thinking about, is faith, and I've been kind of worried about it in that sense, because I was brought up pretty much like, oh, just have faith but with no knowledge. And we tend to do that just to go into Krishna consciousness and say, accept it, don't want to be devoted, just to kind of accept everything without really thinking about it, about knowledge. So, but then kind of been thinking recently, what is my faith, where am I going, you know, it's kind of worried because. But worried about, I don't really connect things, or you know, too much, or just doing things without thinking.
A lot of devotees, you know, are going through this stage, partly because of disappointments in the movement, and then partly just watching ourselves having like the blind faith only, not really asking ourselves where our beliefs are, so that after 10 or 20 years, a devotee can suddenly be asking questions that they thought they had answered before. Do I really want to be a devotee? I don't have to be a devotee, it's up to me. Do I believe in this? And as Madhu said, it's a good time to go. There may be some things that you don't believe, and some things that you do. But you have to at least believe in chanting and following your vows. Anyone else? Yes.
And then, you know, Krishna's pastimes were sometimes wonderful things happening, and sometimes you just feel caught in between. You're very familiar with the basic philosophy, and definitely accepted that then to actually enter into pastimes, it seems like a big leap.
Well, they go together. By reading Prabhupada's books in regular order or any order, sometimes you get exposed to the basics, and sometimes you get exposed to Krishna in Vrindavan, in Krishna's pastimes, especially in the Krishna book or the 10th canto. But of course, there's also the point that you have to be eligible to fully enter the pastimes of Krishna. And so the best way to do that is to be sure you're following the basics, understand the basics, so that your heart becomes pure. Especially Krishna and the gopis can only be understood when we're free of material sex desire. And Prabhupada, he introduces us to these things. We worship Radha Govinda, a conjugal couple, in our temple, and It's just Lord Chaitanya's mercy that we don't have to wait until we're perfect to start hearing about the pastimes also. I don't know exactly what you mean, but there's not like a dichotomy between so-called basic teachings and pastimes. They're all part of the same thing. Sometimes we hear about what Krishna is doing in the creation, how he creates the world. That's another kind of pastime. And then we hear his pastimes in the Krishna book when he's a supreme person, or teaching Arjuna on the battlefield of Bhagavad Gita. Right from the beginning, Prabhupada taught us everything. He mixed it all together, the teachings and the person who is God. You feel one is harder to reach than the other? Which, the pastimes? Harder to believe?
Yeah,
well, that's like my question. That I like Krishna's philosophy, but how come, what is this that he married 16,000 wives and jumped off a hill 80 miles with his brother Balaram? Because abhijananti mam mutha, the fools think that Krishna is an ordinary person, so how could he be doing these things? It is maybe harder, but it's more nectar too. It's not our philosophy, it's not an impersonal philosophy about the absolute truth, nirvana or something, but it's to go with Krishna and be with Krishna. Well, if that's your situation, you shouldn't hide out away from the pastimes. You should try to take them in some form that is palatable to you, but so that you don't think Krishna, when you hear about Krishna, that it's mythology or that he's an ordinary person. If we had some experience of Krishna, that would be nice. But that's what faith is. It's like, you may remember I gave a class here some months ago about seeing Krishna in the darkness. So faith is like that. You don't see Krishna, but you believe he's there. It's a real nice thing. I don't have to see him. I know he's true. That's a faithful person. And you said, how can you believe? You have no experience? You have no proof? I believe. The scriptures say so. Krishna is God. My spiritual master. They wouldn't lie to me. He just has that wonderful quality, faith. So we have to try to increase our capital of faith. I better stop. Okay.